And welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored as always by those rather lovely people at Natural Grower. Now, Natural Grower supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. They're absolutely crammed with certified organic growing power, and if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and veg, your flower beds and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning, certified, organic, peat-free compost and fertiliser are the very best you can buy. And your plants and gardens will love you for using it. All products are certified organic, they're 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those rather lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 15% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop MIC15 into the apply coupon field when you check out. Hello and welcome back to another exciting and fact-filled edition of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. Well, as we head into spring now, isn't it just wonderful to see the spring bulbs popping up, including the daffodils, the scillas, iris reticulata, and for me, well, in my garden at least, sadly my snowdrops are just about to go over, but they have been an absolute joy. So, now that we are all spring ready, I thought it was about time to have another plant special on the podcast. So today, I head back to Kingston Morwood College to chat to head gardener Nigel Hewish. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because Nigel was a guest a few months ago and was one of my tutors when I studied at Kingston Morwood. When we chatted towards the end of last year, we were talking about Nigel's role as a head gardener and what it entailed. But during the course of our chat, Nigel mentioned that Kingston Morwood is the home to the National Collection of Salvias. Now, being a salvia lover myself, and I'm sure many of you are too, my ears pricked up when Nigel reminded me that Kingston Morwood is home of the National Collection of Salvias. So I made a mental note to myself that this would be a great place to come back to for a plant special. So today, Nigel tells us everything we need to know about growing salvias, including soil conditions, which are the hardiest, which are the most tender varieties, how to take cuttings, growing salvias in containers, feeding, propagation, maintenance, pests and diseases, and some great planting combinations. And there's still more on top of that. So, pen at the ready, here's our salvia special. So today I'm back at Kingston Morwood College chatting to Nigel Hewish, who was on the podcast just recently, but we're back today to chat about salvias. And Nigel knows loads about salvias because he manages the National Collection of Salvias here at Kingston Morwood. They're having a bit of a renaissance in our gardens, I think, at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's because of their wide range of plants that you can get for so many different positions within the garden.
And that's, I think, what we all like about them. You say there's a salvia almost at every position. So let's start with, like, getting into the nitty-gritty. So it's the genus's salvia. Are there, is it approximately 1,000 different types of salvia?
Yeah, between 900 and 1,000 different species. That's not including all the varieties as well.
And, of course, that clue includes perennials and annuals. And how many do you have in your collection here?
We've got about 270 different taxa, so that's species and varieties.
That's quite a few. So what I want to ask then, the family that salvias come from, am I correct in saying Lamiaceae?
Lamiaceae, yeah. Used to be Labiatae.
Right.
But now Lamiaceae, so they're in that nettle family.
And within that, now I didn't know about this, I was reading up, within the tribe Menthiae?
Yeah, yeah, the mint family.
The mint family. And something else I just discovered fairly recently is rosemary. Our common rosemary has also now become part of the salvia family. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, that's the problem with reclassification, is that we're... us older ones trying keeping up with the different name changes. Some of my youngest members of staff, they're up with it, but I still use the old names.
Well, you and I both. So it's Salvia rosmarinus now, rather than Rosemary officinalis, as it was in the good old days, as you say. Some of us old ones are not maybe keeping up to date with it. So where do salvias generally generate from? Where would they come from?
Well, obviously we've got a couple of native salvias, pretensis being one, the native clary, and then originally there would have been the sage, Salvia officinalis, would have been brought in probably by the Romans, that we would have used, and then some others from old world areas, so Mediterranean, North Africa, Western Asia, and then more recently from New World, so the Americas, Mexico, South America, and that then brings in the less hardy ones, which are the ones that are make up most of our collection.
And I guess some of those less hardy ones happen to be the ones that we tend to like in our gardens. Is that correct in saying?
Well, they do tend to be the more brightly coloured ones. The ones that are more hardy and from European areas tend to be a little bit more subtle colours, whites and yellows, whereas the ones from the New World tend to be the brighter reds and darker blues.
Those dazzling ones that sort of wink at us seductively when we walk around the garden centres, picking up on the native sage and the Salvia pratensis, what sort of conditions it's native to this country, what colours, where does that thrive?
Yeah, it, and that is the thing, is finding the right area for it. Is that a lot of the Salvias don't like too fertile soil, so it needs to be a little bit more free draining in the sun, and a poorer soil. Lime, so ideally suited to our ground, which is a gravel over chalk, so it's a free draining light soil, ideally suited to salvias.
So a heavy clay soil, they're going to soak a little bit within that sort of wet, those wet conditions.
Yeah, wet conditions are the problem, really, is that it's not necessarily the cold, it's the wet that causes the problem with the hardy ones.
So this time of year, we're recording this, it's January, it's cold at the moment, but it's been cold and dry, but we've got wet coming in. So it's that combination, the wet and the cold, that will do for them.
Yeah, most definitely, is trying to keep them on the dry, the roots system on the dry side, and it's so they really need that free draining soil.
Now, there are, as we've already established, quite a few different salvias. Are we loosely able to sort of group some together so that when we come to sort of like, a lot of people have asked me how to care for salvias, particularly over winter. Let me have a quick look. I've had a number of people write to me. I've had Sheila Colbert, I've had Selena and Anna all asking about how do we protect salvias over winter? What's the best thing to do? And I guess it depends on what type of salvia it is.
Yeah, well, obviously there's the hardy ones that will stay out all year round. But even so, they really need that free draining soil so that they're not sat in wet conditions. And then there's those that are half hardy. So we'll usually go through most winters. But even so, you just need to give them a little bit of protection, either if they're the woody stemmed ones, then leave all the top growth on so that gives it a bit of protection. But if they're the ones that die down, the herbaceous ones, then again, you can give them a bit of protection, leaving some foliage over the top so that they don't completely freeze. And then, of course, there's those that are completely tender, and outside they will be lost. So we have to either lift them and bring them in, or we have to take cuttings and overwinter those cuttings.
Okay, so to pick up on that, the woody salvias, can you give us some examples of names that people might know? Is this the hot lips?
Yeah. So they tend to fall into that group of either the Gregiis, the Crossgermensis, Neuropias, those sort of groups. So yeah, like you say, varieties like hot lips, and all the tree bar and those trilicic, those sort of varieties.
And within that, one of my favourites, Nachtflinder.
Yeah, one of the more recent ones, lovely sort of purpley, bluey, purpley, yeah. Colour.
So with these woody ones, some sort of protection. So when you talk about protection, what do you actually do? I'll tell you what I do when you've told me what you do.
Yeah, well, we, as I say, is what we will do is that with those, we will leave them out, but we will leave all of their top growth on, so that gives a bit of protection. We then make sure that we have stock plants of everything, and we will then take a batch of cuttings in the autumn. And hopefully they will go through the winter, so that we, if the ones in the ground don't come through, then we have replacements for them.
Now, we're on the south coast, but we had quite a tough winter last year, and I've got a number of salvias in my garden. The one thing I do, the ones that stay in the ground, I mulch them quite heavily at the base. Is there any benefit in doing that, or have I wasted my time doing that?
I think it just depends on the actual salvia itself, is that there are some that benefit from that. Those that have the more fleshy roots, what you'll find is that mulch will protect that. The top growth gets hit by the weather.
Yeah.
But then in the spring, and it can be quite late, so it can be, you know, well into May before you start to see some new growth coming. Leave it until that you know definitely that they have either come through or not, and then cut them back, and then away they go again.
Yeah, because it can be quite alarming to see the top growth pretty much black and skeletal, as mine were. I was on the point of thinking, that's it, I'm going to have to dig them up, and I could see the small growth that you say at the base. It was at April, May time.
Yeah.
And then they flowered beautifully last season, so hang in there and before you make any rash decisions.
Yeah, it, over winter, leaving all the top growth on, it does look a little bit tatty at times, and people say, oh, what, you know, aren't you going to tidy that up? Leave it until, I say, well into May, and it's usually most of them will come through. Obviously we do get some losses.
So the herbaceous salvias, are you talking about the likes of Caradonna, the nemorosas?
The more hardy ones.
They're more hardy, because I've been asked by Patrice, who lives in Brittany, what are the hardiest varieties of salvia?
So they fall into that, as you say, the nemorosa, the sylvestris.
Yeah.
Superba.
Superba.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So with those, what sort of action should we be taking with those when we get to the end of the season to protect them for the autumn winter time?
Again, leave all the top growth on, but you can give them a mulch. And the thing is with a mulch is that it doesn't want to be too heavy and wet, because then that can be causing problems. So you want to be things like strolch.
Yes, yeah, where it's not going to hold on to the moisture. So sort of like a heavy mulch is going to hold moisture, and as you say, will actually exacerbate the situation, I guess. So we've talked about some of the hardy varieties there. What about the tender varieties? What sort of, which salvias fall under that category, and what action should we be taking over winter there?
Yeah, well, it is some of the really tender ones, things like Calcalifolia, Convertiflora, are not going to make it through the winter outside, so we've got to be doing some giving them some protection, and so we can be lifting those, potting them up, bringing them in. They only need to be kept frost free, A temperature of, you know, 5 to 8 degrees will be ideal for them to overwinter. And if you can take some cuttings in the autumn, then that will give you hopefully new plants for the spring.
We've touched on cuttings a couple of times, and we've been looking around your salvia collection here. How do you go about taking cuttings? So it's autumn time or the end of the season?
Yes, in the autumn. Now, the problem is that if you are looking to take cuttings off of the plants that you've got in the garden, it's not always good propagation material because they are flowering at that time of the year, end of the summer, going into autumn. It's mostly flowering material. So what we do is we actually grow plants as stock plants, which we can cut back in the summer, and they then start into growth again to give us cutting material for the autumn. And we then keep those plants over winter to then hopefully, if we need to, give us another crop of cuttings in the spring.
So by cutting them back, these mother plants, stock plants, in the summer, you're promoting fresh new growth, which is going to be ripe for propagation.
That's right, yeah, is non-flowering material.
And will that non-flowering material, when you get to the point where you're taking the cuttings, will it have hardened off? Is it a semi-ripe cutting, or are you? Is it softwood? Or
it's a softwood cutting that we're taking. Okay. Then, and so therefore it will root quite quickly, and we can pot it up before the worst of the weather comes.
So what sort of time of the year are you doing that? I remember, because softwood cuttings, you say, they root very quickly, but you have to be careful about this balance with the humidity and making sure the conditions are right.
Yeah, as I would suggest, you could any time from July through, but normally we would do it at the beginning of September and usually through September and into October. Once you get to the end of October, then the light levels are getting less, and so therefore rooting is not so quick, and then you get problems with disease and slow rooting.
So can I just then really go into detail on this? So what growing media are you using for these softwood cuttings, and how are you protecting them? I know you're doing it on a larger scale than perhaps we might at home, but any tips for us doing it at home?
Yeah, well, obviously changes with compost is that we've now gone to a peat-free compost to which we add vermiculite.
Okay.
And then we're very fortunate in having a mist unit for rooting, so bottom heat with mist. But you could use a propagator with a little bit of bottom heat and a closed case so that it's keeping humidity up around the plant.
And that's the key thing with softwood cuttings, that humidity, that warm environment for them to grow away. And as you say, they will strike and sort of take quite quickly usually.
Yeah, most definitely is keeping that humidity up, so keeping them moist all the time.
And so do you leave those then until the spring, or do you actually pot them on sort of, I guess you're going into the winter then, aren't you? It's probably, what do you do?
Yeah, so hopefully we will get them rooted within sort of 4-6 weeks, and we can then pot them up into a 3.5-inch pot, which they will then go through the winter, and hopefully by the beginning of February, they will have made a reasonable root system in that pot, and we can then look to pot them up into a 1-litre pot.
Okay, so again, just a bit more detail. The vermiculite you add, this free draining thing is important. What sort of mix approximately, 50-50 or...?
Yeah, no, that again, we're still learning with that a little bit because of the change of compost. Is that when we were using peat-based composts, it made little difference as to how much vermiculite we used, and we could cut it right down to sort of 25%.
Right.
Whereas with the peat-free compost, we are actually adding a little bit more, so around about up to a 50%. vermiculite.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is because that's what I've been experimenting with at home. So it's good to hear how you do it here. So, okay, we've talked about propagation, and then you maybe have a second bite of the cherry in spring if you need some more then.
Yeah, if we've had a variety that hasn't done well over the winter, then we've got our stock plants, and hopefully they will have produced some more cutting material in the spring, and we'll take another batch of cuttings then. They probably won't be big enough to plant out that year, but they'll grow on for the next year.
Okay, we've talked about growing in the ground. What about salvias in containers? Can they all be grown in containers? Are some better suited to the ground?
Yeah, some are better suited to containers. Probably the more tropical, less hardy varieties are better suited to the containers. And we can use a more organic compost there with a little bit more body in the media.
So which varieties or species are we actually looking at here? Those ones that actually need a bit more body? Because I think I've fallen down with some of those thinking they all need a free draining compost, but that's not quite the case necessarily.
Yeah, no, is things like Miniata, lovely red, glossy leaved. So if they've got glossy leaves, that they tend to be the ones that you'll want a little bit more humus in the compost.
In the compost. Obviously, plants in containers are reliant upon us for feeding and watering. Should we be feeding our salvias, irrespective of whether they're in containers or in the ground, and the different types of salvias?
Yes and no.
Okay, next question.
It is that those that are out in the garden, most of them won't require too much feeding. What I would suggest is just a background feed or fertilizer, and not one that is going to be high in nitrogen. You don't want them making too much growth, because obviously you want them to be flowering.
So just like a balanced sort of chicken manure pellets, or yeah,
chicken manure, grow more,
yeah.
Blood, fish and bone, those sorts of things, not going to give too much nitrogen there, or even, you know, ones that are just based on phosphate and potash.
So just for everybody to, so they're clear, the nitrogen will produce the green leafy growth, and you're looking for flowers and root growth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So now, where are we going to go next? Now, Yvonne has written to me. She has one of the amethysts. Can't keep it going. Should she dig up the mother plant or just take cuttings? She wants to grow it en masse, but I wonder if she can't keep it going. Perhaps if she's in the wrong soil, maybe. So,
yeah, I would certainly look at the position that it's growing in, the soil conditions, and also the light conditions. They might just need to be just move it around a bit. But what I would say is that it would be better to go with new cuttings and repropagate, so that you get some new vigor into the plant.
Talking about this propagation thing, salvia division, can we divide our salvias? Again, is there a process, when to do it, how to do it?
Yeah, so the usually it's the hardy varieties, but those that are rosette forming, we can divide up. Usually we think of in the spring.
And so some of the rosette forming varieties, which ones are we looking at there?
Yeah, the Sylvestris and
so like the Caradonna, the Maynard.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So we can divide some of them. That's the main thing there. Someone has asked me again, I think this is Patrice, just general maintenance tips through the season. What should we be doing through the season to keep them looking pristine?
Yeah, the actually don't need to do a great deal, but what I would say is we do need to be quite tidy, so clearing up leaves that are starting to look a little bit gone over, or maybe infected with a bit of disease or so, and clear that away so that it doesn't affect the rest of the plant.
Okay. Which leads me quite neatly into the bit that I hate most about talking about plants, the pests and diseases. We sort of love our plants, but sometimes there's something, a pest or a disease, that sort of predates them. Anything with salvias we need to be aware of?
Well, fortunately, salvias are one plant that doesn't suffer too much with pests and diseases. Usually, or where we find the main problem is where we're growing under protection. So under glass, that's where we get the problems with whitefly and botrytis and things like that. Outside, less so. You may get some problems with some aphids, leafhoppers, things like that that affect the leaves, but not too much. You might get a bit of puckering on the leaves, and powdery mildew, things like that. But if you keep an eye on them and remove those bits when you see them, hopefully that will keep them fairly free.
So, well, that's good news. So it's down to us, really. It's keen observation, keeping a close eye on our plants, all of our plants in our gardens, to nip things in the bud as and when we start to see pests or diseases occur, or colouring or discoloration of the leaves.
Yeah, most definitely. Hygiene is a big thing. Clear away any debris, and also get rid of it completely, that it's not going to be coming back again. I'm not saying you can't compost it, but don't compost it with material that is going to come back into that area of the garden.
Okay, thank you. I've been asked by Sheila Colbert, what plants look great with salvias? Great planting combinations. And again, I guess it depends on, because some of them are quite big, some of them are quite small. Any suggestions?
It's quite a wide range of plants that can go with the salvias and all different ones. I think thinking on where you're growing them, and they want to be on that lighter, free-draining, sunnier position, and so the plants that also do well in those positions, so Mediterranean plants, the herbs, the rosemaries, the lavenders, santalinas, things like that.
So right plant, right place again. So it's looking for plants that will grow in those same conditions, so we're not then having to pander to one plant because it shouldn't really be there. Now, I was reading just recently about companion planting and sages being a great companion to roses, supposedly to help black spot or rust.
It's not something that I've actually done. I've read about it, but not actually done. And funny enough, that is one thing that I'm looking to try this year, because I've got a rose bed and I'm thinking I'll be able to plant some salvias in amongst them, and they'll hopefully look good, and keep the roses a little bit cleaner.
Yeah, something to do with the oil in the foliage and in the heat, the oil exudes sort of like a gas or something that is supposed to be something to help protect. So
yeah, and I can quite understand that, because most salvias have some sort of scent. The foliage gives off some sort of scent, whether that be nice or in a few cases pretty stinky.
Now, I love salvias underneath roses, and I get told off this because I say that roses can be a little bit leggy lower down. I think the salvias just grow nicely into that area, so you have this sea of roses above and the nice purple. I like the salvia caradonna, the mainite, look quite nice under the roses. So we'll see how that goes this year. Any particular favourites of yours? What are your favourite salvias and why?
Some of the bright colours, I've mentioned Calcalifolia already, which is bright blue and a lovely foliage. Convertiflora, a lovely brick red flower there, so I like that. Of the winter flowering ones, in where we are here now, is the Karvinskii, which is a lovely pink.
Yeah, that's you showed me that just before we started chatting, and that's definitely on my list. That's a beautiful salvia.
Yes, it's lovely. But you do need to have a greenhouse or conservatory with a little bit of height to be able to get it to flower. But it will flower right the way through the winter.
So what usually happens is when this podcast goes out, people are thinking, I want to actually start growing salvias if they're not already. Are there any salvias that are good for new growers or new people to salvias? Which ones might you recommend? Some of the easier to grow ones?
I think the ones that like the Gregiis, Cross-Gemensis groups, we've mentioned Amistad and some of the varieties of that. Yeah.
Picking up on Amistad, I've looked everywhere to see what variety is that? What species does that come from?
Yeah, I don't know either. I would presume that it's got a little bit of Guaranitica in it somewhere.
Yeah, I jotted that down. I've been looking, and Salvia hot lips is a Gemensis. There's Salvia amarosa, the Caradonna, and the Nachtflinder is a Gemensis. Could I find anything for Amistad? Not at all. So, okay, I feel a little bit better about that one. Talking about the flowers, what are the parts of the flower parts called? Do they have names?
That they are a typical labiate flower with two lips. So you've got a hood and two lips falling. So very much that tubular flower, although it varies so much within the group of how long that tube is, how big the petals are and the fall, and the hood. Some haven't got a hood.
And I guess that then in turn determines what insects pollinate them.
They are good for pollinators, so they are a good pollinator plant. As you say, no doubt the different ones are only pollinated by certain insects.
And I'm thinking of those sort of like American, South American ones in particular. I get like the hummingbirds with that very long beak. I mean, that's probably the wrong term, so apologies for anybody who's listening. But
no, and you're right. That's probably the case, and that's probably why we don't get viable seed on those varieties. We don't have any problems with the European varieties because they set seed readily, but some of the more tropical ones we don't get them set in seed.
We've covered a lot of information today. What I want to finish with today, for people who are interested in seeing the National Collection of Salvias here, when's the best time to come? What have you got here? Tell us about Kingston Morwood's collection.
Yeah, so what we're creating at the moment is a area of borders that have our National Collection of Salvias, but also National Collection of Penstemons in them, so that you can view them at the same time, and they flower both at the same time. So it's that late summer, early autumn is the best time to be viewing them, and that is the half hardy and the tender varieties. We don't have too many of the hardy varieties, a few, but not many.
So the fact that you have those two collections here, they have slightly different growing conditions, I suspect.
Quite similar. Is the Penstemons like a free-draining soil in the sun, and just like most of the salvias we grow.
So they could make good companions. So do you actually grow them together, or do you grow the collection sort of like almost like as a monoculture?
No, we grow them together.
Wow, okay, that's a great companion then.
Yeah. So, and we intermingle them so that you, because obviously we've got those salvias that have got a lot of height, you know, they can quite easily get up to 8-10 feet. And then most of the Penstemons fall within the sort of 2 feet, 4 feet. And then you've got some salvias that are low growing and spreading.
And so certainly when it comes to the maintenance, I know sort of like from pentstemons at home, keep the top growth on, the protection, sort of like some of them will sort of be susceptible to the cold and the wet conditions.
Yeah, it is most definitely is leave all the top growth on pentstemons over the winter. That protects them. And it's protecting them from the rain, the wet, rather than so much of the cold.
And so then again, when we get to maybe April, May time, you see that new growth, that new flush of growth at the base, that's when you cut back the old growth.
Yeah, wait, leave it and wait until that new growth starts to come, and then you can cut back the old growth.
Don't be tempted to get in there too soon and tidy up too soon.
There's a lot of things we can tidy up, but salvias and pentstemons are one thing that we want to leave.
Step away until the beginning of the new season, that new growth comes along. Nigel, thanks again. It's been really enlightening. I've learned a few things as well today, so thank you so much. And so everybody, Kingston Moorwood is the place to come and see the National Collections of Salvias and indeed pentstemons. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that was almost a 2-for-1 offer there, wasn't it? As we touched on pentstemons at the end. And as we heard, they have very similar growing conditions and requirements to those of salvias. So another great planting combination there. My thanks to Nigel for sharing so much information with us. And as he mentioned, Kingston Moorwood holds the national collection of both pentstemons and salvias and is a beautiful garden to visit year-round. Now, my thanks to you, as always, for listening. And if you're new to the podcast, hello there. It's lovely to have you here. And of course, a huge shout out and hello to my regular listeners. If you haven't subscribed, why not? You'll need to head there as soon as you've stopped listening so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And if you are able to leave a review, that would be wonderful. Now, if you haven't had enough of me, oh dear, you can find me on Instagram where I'm Mike_thegardener. And I look forward to coming back next time with more gardening joy. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.